Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus, and today the Age of Heroes marches on. We have a small technical problem, and I'll be playing a song, and I will return after the song. Our next song will be Mighty Elohim. Greetings and welcome back to Age of Heroes. I am Hercules Invictus, and today we'll be speaking about informed voting with Diana Montford. Greetings and welcome, Diana. Welcome back to the show.
Well, hi there. How are you? I'm delighted to be here.
Now, I'm Greek, as everyone knows, and the Greek philosophers of yore had a very poor opinion of democracy. And the reason why they did was that if the electorate was not informed, it invariably led to first populism and then tyranny. And I know that I'm now a staunch defender of democracy, and I see those fears emerge as we watch the stage of the world and what's going on in our own two-party system. So I also grew up in a household where my parents felt that it doesn't matter who you vote for. It really doesn't make any difference at all. As I grew older, I became very independent in my views, and I would vote solely on issues. And I still believe issues are very important, but that no longer works in the polarized world that we live in. So it became choosing a party, the central issue. And I chose the Democrats because they reflected my values more powerfully than any of the other choices that I had. And I explored for a good year. I talked to lots of people and listened to lots of videos and read lots of articles. So that's basically my journey to being a Democrat. What was yours like?
Well, I come from an exceedingly long line of liberals on my mother's family. I know liberal is a dirty word now. The Republicans have made it thus. But, well, my ancestor, Don Pedro Rodriguez in Spain in the 18th century, was a lawyer and political theorist who wrote several books on political theory defending the rights of the Spanish agrarian, you know, the Spanish farmer. And 100 years later, my grandfather, Don Basilio Alvarez Rodriguez, more popularly known as Basilio Alvarez, continued carrying that ball and became that era's champion of the Spanish agrarian. He was a former Catholic priest who was known as the father of the poor. He quit the priesthood, became a lawyer, a lefty lawyer. Hey, it's my family, right? And we're all lefties here. And, you know, and he was one of the founders of the Spanish Republic.
Wow.
And in 1931, yeah, and he was a Supreme Court justice. He was twice elected to Spanish Parliament. And ultimately, he was a Supreme Court justice, like Sotomayor, like Kagan, you know. But then came the Spanish Civil War, and that was that. Anyway, I'm transgender. So not only am I a Democrat, by the way, you can look both of them up on Wikipedia. I'm boy, am I self-advertising tonight. This is a disgrace. But yeah, I know, but I should be a little more, you know, discreet, but I'm not. I'm not discreet. Nah. We Democrats are a crude bunch. What can I tell you? But anyhow, so my journey is that I'm transgender. I've always been very progressive. You know, in the 60s when I was a child, I was really into ending the war in Vietnam, rights for everyone, women, persons of color, certainly gays. I've always been, I come from that kind of family. So I just, it's as natural as breathing to me to be a Democrat. Right now I'm a member of the Four Freedoms Democratic Club on the Upper East Side of New York and the Stonewall Democrats, which is based in Greenwich Village. That's a gay political club. The Four Freedoms is an all-gender political club. And, I've been elected to several things in my political quote-unquote career. I was twice elected a judicial delegate. That means we choose judges. And I was Wesley Clark's alternate delegate when he ran in 2004, but he abdicated the election. And my name was on the ballot, too, but because I was on his team, they didn't realize that they could still vote for me to be an alternate delegate to someone, you know. So that was that, and as you know, I'm a member of the New York Democratic County Committee, New York County Democratic Committee, and you are a member of the New Jersey Democratic Committee?
In Tenafly, yes.
Yeah, and so, I'm as you and I have both lived under Western European dictatorships briefly, but we did. You in Greece, me in Spain, we know what a privilege voting is and how important it is to keep the wheels of democracy turning.
Very, very true. And again, I grew up in a household where voting was taken for granted. But as I grew older, I saw that the people who were taking voting for granted often complained about the way things were. And that didn't make sense to me. I figured that if you weren't happy with the way things are, you need to change them into the way you'd like them to be. And by voting, you're taking a direct action in a way that counts, and that your vote, your voice. I first got involved with politics in the early 1980s briefly. I had to get out of it because I was a young father, and politics tends to eat up your life.
Totally.
I learned that if you can articulate yourself very clearly and not be afraid of issues that people didn't really want to touch or talk about, that very quickly you could become involved in all sorts of committees and look into and help fix a wide variety of local problems. So I saw the power of politics. And when I returned here... Go ahead.
There is a problem in this country. While local elections, the popular vote counts. In presidential elections, as we know, the Electoral College negates the popular vote. So really, is our country a democracy? One wonders. Because if the popular vote counts for nothing, it's a complete sham. And I think we need to do away with the Electoral College.
I also believe that the Electoral College has become a problem, that the circumstances that led to its creation are now standing in the way of serving the people of our here and now. That again, I could understand why it was created, and it did solve a problem.
Yeah, people were illiterate, and they could be fall prey to the blandishments of a con artist, much the way we did 4 years ago, 6 years ago, whenever it was. We didn't, but a lot of people did. And but now it's a different ball game, and people are more educated and less naive and less credulous, and it's time to let go of, Clarence Thomas. He wants to be an originalist, he says. But you can't cherry-pick these things. I mean, he wants to do away with gay marriage, the right to contraception, certainly the right to abortion. He's already scored with that one. But now, Virginia versus Loving and the Emancipation Proclamation were not in effect in the 1700s. So how can he be an originalist when it would not be to his advantage to follow that course?
That's a question that many have been asking, and I don't know the answer to it. I try to focus on what can be done at whatever level we happen to be on. How would we fix that with the Electoral College?
Well, we simply do away with it. The problem is that so many people say, well, in that case, places like California, New York, Texas would rule because we have the greatest populations. Well, yeah, but I mean, majority rule here, what can I say? That's the way it is. If Rhode Island is small and California is huge, well, yeah, and,
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you can't, we're not a democracy. We might be a republic, yes, but we are not a democratic republic in the sense that the popular vote counts for anything. It counts for nothing. Hillary won the election. Trump took it. And we all remember, when Gore won the popular vote, but Bush Sr., I believe, won or took the election.
Yes.
Was it Bush Sr.? It was someone.
I don't remember if it was W or Sr.
Oh, it was W. You're right. It was one of those Bushes. A Bush baby, yes.
And it didn't make sense to me back then. It still doesn't make sense to me. My wife explains the Electoral College to me whenever I get baffled by it. And again, I can understand why it was formed, but it no longer serves. And I don't think there's been many Republican presidential candidates that won the popular election, but still they managed to gain the presidency. I don't think any of them won. There's maybe one in the past 40 years.
Well, this is money talks. The Republicans have most of the money, and they are often, sadly, misogynistic, white supremacist, racist, and homophobes, and they want the world the way they want it, and they don't care what the people want. And what I think is going to happen, I think they're dancing on the edge of a volcano. I think that people are going to be so fed up that really this is sort of France 1789. As people grow poorer, as the middle class dissolves, which to a large part it already has, thanks to globalization, thanks to a lot of things, when people have no money and they have no food and their children are crying and they can't do anything to stop the crying, there is no food, people have nothing to lose. And that's when they're dangerous. And that's something that the Republicans should bear in mind.
Yes, we are getting into very dangerous waters with what's going on, and people are starting to get fed up. Unfortunately, a lot of the younger people are losing faith in the entire system. And right now, we need to work with the system we have until we can improve it.
And yes, but they've done away with voting rights for so many. So we might not even be able to work with the system we have.
Well, there was a...
I'm not advocating... I am not advocating revolution. I am not advocating civil war. What I'm advocating is a more balanced, less polarized world, as you are. You're saying the same thing. And I think it's time that we came together. You know, I mean, years ago, people would say, oh, I'm so proud to be an American. And nobody said Republican or Democrat. They just, I'm so proud to be an American. Today, you know, we have such horrific divisions that, you know, I mean, this is not productive. This is not good for anyone of any party.
That is correct. And I agree with you 100%. And again, I'm going to refocus on what can we possibly do, because again, there has to be something we can do. Locally, it's easier to ascertain what to do. You can go to a local mayor's and council meeting and make your voice heard. There are organizations that you can join that are focused on particular issues that are important to you, and you can lend your energy, your time, or your money to these organizations. And again, it's much more visible. Sometimes things take a little while to happen. Like it took 5 or 6 years to get a dog park from idea to actuality, but it happened because people didn't give up. They just kept pressing forward. And it's not that different on a larger arena. However, it takes a lot longer for things to happen. And people are not used to looking that long term for these changes.
Do you think that the Supreme Court should be increased in size or not?
I believe that it should be increased in size because that seems to be the only option available, and there is precedent for it.
Yes, there is. But so many people are used to nine.
It's unbalanced. And it's been politicized, very obviously and openly politicized. And it does not, it's been shown on poll after poll after poll, it does not reflect the will of the people.
That's it. And that is dangerous. That could tear our country apart. And they're taking away freedoms. It's easy to give people freedoms. It enrages people when you take away their freedoms, especially things as personal as sexual behavior. You know, no contraception, no gay sexual intimacy. You can't do that. That's nobody's business.
No, it shouldn't be anybody's business. And again, my knowledge of politics is not as vast as many people's, but it seemed to me in my limited knowledge that the Supreme Court justices said that they weren't going to touch Roe versus Wade, and then they turned around and did.
Which could be interpreted as perjury.
It could be. In my understanding, yes. So I wonder why hasn't that been pursued? Because they did. They openly lied. It was televised. I heard it with my own ears and saw it with my own eyes. So they contradicted what was told when they were being questioned to determine whether they should be assigned to these seats. So those are the types of things I believe actions can be taken on. I don't know which actions can be taken on them, but this was done openly. And if something's done openly, doesn't make it right.
No, and they seem to have contempt for fair play. They seem to think that those who believe in it are naive, and I don't think that's the case.
And a lot of people ask me why am I so interested in modern democracy and republicanism, because most of my focus is on ancient things. I don't want to return to ancient times. Ancient times were in very many ways horrible. They had slavery. They had all sorts of institutions that are abhorrent. But some of the ideas they came up with, like democracy, had potential, and they've moved forward over time and they've evolved. And what we have now is better than what they had then, but it's still not perfect, not by any means. And we
Winston Churchill said democracy is a terrible, terrible system, but it is better than any other system.
Very true. And as to taking people's rights, I don't know what right a small handful of people discussing a point from perspectives that are outdated. I didn't know they had the power to all of a sudden take away rights from people and promise to take away even more rights as their term continues.
Well, first of all, I think it would be a very good idea if we set term limits for Supreme Court justices. Second, just the definition of the Supreme Court is that it is supposed to be above partisan politics.
Correct.
And it's not. Although I admit we're guilty too, come on. We had a good run as progressives. We changed the U.S. We made abortion legal, all sorts of things legal. Lawrence versus Texas, which allowed gay sex. You know, all these things. So we had a good run, but you cannot, it's probably inimical to human nature to have a Supreme Court that is not political, because people will bring their own prejudices and needs and desires to whatever job they're in, and this is, of course, the ultimate job, to the point where they can decide an election as they did with W versus Gore. Although I think Florida also had something to do with that. But still, yeah. I mean, it's supposed to be above partisan politics. And it never is. It never has been. It probably never will be.
And yet, it was so blatantly stacked. It's true. People bring their own experience, their own opinions, their own biases, their own prejudices into every situation that they're in, but those appointments were deliberately done to achieve a certain purpose that corrupts the court, I believe.
Well, if you remember, they forbade Obama to appoint a Supreme Court Justice, Merrick Garland, I believe,
yes.
During the final year of his tenure, Obama's, but when poor Ruth Bader Ginsburg died, something like 2 weeks before the election, Trump couldn't wait to stick somebody in, Amy Comey Barrett, whatever her name is, you know? And I mean, talk about not fair play. I mean, come on, folks. If you're going to make us not have a Supreme Court justice, you know, during the final year, I mean, come on, you know? So I thought that was not nice. So now, of course, we have a majority conservative court. you know, which is not doing a lot of good, because I just can't take people's rights away. They're not going to stand for it, you know. And
no,
it's going
not.
To stoke the fires of the criminal element. If you take, all right, let's say contraception is illegal. There are going to be 1,000 people in their basements brewing up birth control pills and making diaphragms out of toilet plungers. You know, I mean, or half a lemon or something, and selling them at a huge profit. It's like prohibition, you know, when there were all these bootleggers. If you make something illegal, but it's something people want, they will find a way to get it. And there will be profiteers involved in this illegal business, and that won't do anyone any good. You'll just increase, you know, the criminal element.
That's very true, and that is what happens invariably when these prohibitions are made. You can't change who people are and their essential nature, and you can't thwart nature herself in making decisions for human beings.
Yeah, exactly. And we are, yes, heading in a very difficult direction for most people. And most people in this country are working class, if they're lucky enough to have a job these days. I know they say, oh, there are so many jobs. Yeah, you want to be a burger flipper? Sure. But there are no, like, middle-class jobs. All the great factory jobs that made our country the strongest nation in the world, gone. Gone somewhere else. You know, we live in a service economy. That's fine, but how many times can you have your hair cut in a year, you know? So, I mean, we just have to get it together and realize that the working class really is the backbone of any nation. And you cannot have a small group of elitists, Ivy League moneyed elitists, deciding that everyone else is somehow less human than they are, because that's not the way things work, you know.
And yet, here we are.
Yes.
Is there, you've been in, again, you've been in politics much longer than I've been in politics. Part of the new show that I'm launching next week is to kind of explain, starting with local politics and working the way up the ladder. I've been talking to a lot of people, and a lot of people are very supportive of this, is to describe the different layers of governance or leadership, starting from the community level and then moving upward, and how they are influenced, not so much by PACs and money, but by people contacting their office and talking to them. I remember when I had a show on cable, as you have a show on cable, there are ways of determining directly like what your viewership was, not only through the numbers that you got of viewers through your own metrics, but also depending on how many letters you got and how many telephone calls you had. And this was especially true when I was on UHF, which I don't even know if that exists anymore. There were ways of determining what was important to your audience by these things. And politicians used to have ways of determining how important something was based on what type of feedback they got. So that's the way, you know, knowing what is important for that particular politician and how they respond to what forms of communication, it's possible to get your point across. Otherwise, you might receive a very kind and polite form letter. I've received letters that were pages long by some politicians over the years. So the Supreme Court is a biggie, and what you had suggested earlier with basically adding people to it, it's to balance it again, because it's unbalanced right now. And yes, you're right too. It's happened before in our history. But how do we fix that? How do we suggest that there be a withdrawal of support for the Electoral College? Those are federal level and historic things. So how would we even start something like that?
Well, in a more democratic society, we would put it up to a vote, a referendum. But, you know, no one's willing to do that because, there's money to be made in being a member of the Electoral College, you know? I mean, probably bribery. I don't know. Who knows? But one would suspect. And, okay, now the Supreme Court. When Kavanaugh was up for the Supreme Court, Kavanaugh's a very rich man from a very rich family. I went to Ivy League schools, had everything given to him. When that lovely lady, whose name escapes me, accused him of attempted rape, he was outraged that anyone would dare to affront His Royal Highness, Lord Kavanaugh, you know, and come close to costing him something he considered a birthright, you know, being a Supreme Court justice, because he grew up expecting all the good stuff of the world to drop into his lap with no effort, you know. It would help if we had maybe working class women who somehow managed to go to law school, people who know what most people have to live like, you know, who know what it's like to have to budget and save up for things and, you know, go to public school and go to a state college if you're lucky enough to go to a state college. You know, I mean, we need more real people, more people in tune with most of us, because, you know, all these elite folks, they're great. They don't get the way most of us live.
No, obviously, they don't have to deal with what most people in this country have to deal with, so it doesn't enter their consciousness as something important. It's like the Let Them Eat Cake, Marie Antoinette, you know, she didn't know any better.
She actually didn't say that, but yeah, I know what you mean, yeah.
So for a lot of people, if something's outside of their experience, they don't seek out an alternate viewpoint, especially if they consider the people with this alternate viewpoint, as you said, beneath them, socially or in whatever other way, yeah, they choose to look down on someone.
And what I'd like to know is, what kind of skullduggery did their ancestors do to get all that money, you know? Because money doesn't drop from the trees. They must have done some pretty skanky things to get all that money so that, you know, their descendants could puff up with vanity and think that they're entitled to all the good stuff.
Yeah, I have no idea. I haven't been an active fan or student of what the very rich have done to get that way. There was a book written about that a while ago, but I never read it. I think it was called The Super Rich and How They Got That Way. It had a catchy title.
Well, but I really think that we need more representation of the people. You know, the sad thing is we do live in a two-party system. And other parties, like the Working Families parties, like other parties, often are considered fringe. And there's no chance. The independents, for example. There's no independent primary, you know? So, as you were saying, informed voting. There is no independent primary. There's a Democratic primary and a Republican primary, and that's all she wrote. And I think that's very unfair, and really, words fail me. I just think that we need an overhaul, a very positive overhaul, without war, without revolution. Just sit down and be reasonable. Just think, how can we come together? How can we stop this factionalism? We have a civil war going on, a war of ideas, and one side hates the other side, and it works both ways, and we can't do that. We're all Americans. We're all human. We have more in common than we don't, and we should realize that, I think, don't you?
Oh, of course. We should realize that. However, we're also taught to be competitive. And everything, especially our elections, they're a contest. You know, they're a competition with the winner gaining title and position. So that's part of human nature. It's part of human survival. But I believe, too, that we can create a better system. One of the titles for the things I've been doing are called the Elysium Project, or one of the umbrellas, I guess would be a better word. Elysium is the best heaven that the humans or the Greeks could imagine. So, yeah, there were different Elysiums for different classes or professions of people, because everybody has, you know, certain things that they would consider to be heavenly or the best thing possible. And we're seeing that now with Republicans in the fact that they seem to think that they're bringing back some sort of a golden age. But the golden age that they're trying to bring back was horrible for most people who lived through them. They might have been golden for a select few, but they weren't golden for everybody else. And
yeah, I mean, Mrs. Astor is dead, you know. Her ballroom may have held 400, but there are a lot more people than 400 of the people. And, you know, we have to, if only, this used to be a great country because you could come here with nothing. And you could make something. If you were willing to work hard and you studied, or at least you were smart, you didn't even have to go to school. You know, Supreme Court, here's a fun fact. Supreme Court justices do not have to go to law school. Did you know that?
Yes, I was aware that. I questioned it, but I don't have a satisfactory answer. Do you have one?
No. I mean, talk about a lack. That's like saying, I want to be a brain surgeon, but I don't want to go to med school. Fly back. Let me try it, you know. I mean, no, that's not good, not good. So if only we could come together. I've never seen, even in the 60s, it wasn't this, you know, people at one another's throats, family members not speaking to each other because of a candidate they're backing. This is crazy. We can't do this. We're all Americans. Come together, folks, you know?
It is crazy, and I discovered recently that one of my close friends has bought into all of the, you know, Republican way of looking at things, the extreme Republican way of looking at things, and
he must have made some money. Is that why?
No, just idealistically, that's where he stands with some of the policies, and he looks up to Trump. So,
oh, please.
We had to, you know, deal with this. It's a close friend. And I don't want to, like, close people out of my life because they don't agree with me. I have a very peculiar viewpoint, so that would include most people. I'm very isolated if I had to kick people out of my life. But we agreed just not to talk about it because we're not going to change each other's mind about this particular thing. However, even with people with extremely different opinions, there's a whole range of things that you do agree on. So we decided to focus on those. And that seems to work for me anyway during this period of time. I don't understand what you believe. I really can't get it. And so far, none of these arguments has swayed me. But you get it. So that's fine. How about we focus on the things that we both agree on and work on those things together? And the other thing
is a great idea. If only we could, if only some candidate would say that when she or he is running, that would be the best thing, you know?
So are you planning on running for any office?
No. Well, I'll tell you, in 2005, they wanted me to run for borough president here in Manhattan. And they told me, they said, listen, you're not going to win, you know this, but it'll make a big statement. And I said, you know, I'm doing a weekly television show. I have other things on my plate. I can't really do it. And also, I don't have any money. And they said, oh, the money will be found. I said, well, that's very nice. But, you know, there were like, I don't know, 10 candidates already. I said, you don't need another one, you know. And they had two gay people of Latin descent, Margarita Lopez and a man named Carlos Manzano. They didn't need a third gay Latin, you know, trans Latin. I mean, they had plenty, you know. So I said, no, if I'm offered the opportunity again, given how factionalized our political system has become, this time I would say yes. I would bite the bullet and do the work, because now I think it's important that really we come together and not be at one another's throats. And that would be my political slogan, you know.
That is great, and I hope that you run so that more than a statement could be made, but this way you could have an active role in making decisions which affect us all. I was going to run, And then my life got extremely busy, so I didn't have the
time
to do
anything. Well, that's the whole thing. I mean, it just takes so much time. It's a it's a lifestyle. It's not a job, you know?
Right.
And, I mean, you have to have, like, nothing else going on in your life to give it 1,000%. And that's fine if your daddy is very rich and he can subsidize you, you know. But if your daddy's dead and he never had any money to begin with, this is a problem, you know?
Yeah, it does. It eats up your time. It eats up your life. And a little bit more at a time. I remember that's why I finally got out of it in the early 80s, because there was no time for home. There was no time for my wife. There was no time for my kid. There was no time for my job. So it's like, I really have to stop doing this. I'm accomplishing good things. I believed that I was doing good for my community, but it's like, I have a life too. So I have to weigh the pros and cons of each, and my life went out. So,
yeah, but think of all the good you're doing with your podcast. I listen every night, and
well, thank you.
It's so diverse. Whatever people are into, chances are they'll hear it on your show. So, I mean, you're doing much more good doing your podcast than you could in elected office. Really, I mean, you are. Think about it, you know?
Well, thank you. And I will think about it. And you've just suggested something to me that I've been thinking about. So it adds weight to that argument. One of the things I'd like to do with these podcasts, and again, I still plan on keeping my minimal political involvement active, because I feel that does help to some degree, at least locally, but to show what is the power of a citizen, you know, and to really explore that, you know, that as a citizen, it's citizens who have power, even if we don't pursue political office, even if we don't join movements or organizations or have the resources to contribute to them, just by virtue of being citizens, we have a tremendous amount of power. So how do we express that power and direct it towards goals that will be healthy and beneficial and empowering for everybody?
You're doing it right now.
Well, thank
you're doing
you.
It now.
Well, I'd like to do it in a more structured way. So I'm going to ask you if I pull together some sort of panel. Do you have Zoom?
I don't know. I don't do computers.
Okay, Zoom.
But
is
I have a telephone.
Zoom is by telephone. Do you have like a digital telephone or a dial-in phone?
I have a landline. I'm an old fogey.
Okay. We'll need to work around that, because otherwise it might show your telephone number on the monitor. You can call in by phone. What some people do is they put their picture on their phone, and this way when they call in, even though they can't.
Well, I don't have a cell phone. I use a landline.
Okay. We'll figure it out. Maybe I'll do it on audio. This way we could start on audio and then work on video later on. But I do panels occasionally, and the panels are on different topics. So like we've been doing one for the past year on UFOs, the entities. What is that all about? The UFO entity enigma. You know, what are people experiencing?
And there are so many diverse ones.
Yes.
I mean,
so
reptilians, greys, you know, the whole deal. Yeah.
We have a different one every month. And we started one on cryptids. And I'd like to start doing one on these issues, these political issues, and exploring them beyond the interviews that I'll be doing for the show. Have discussions from people who are involved in politics in some way or want to get involved in politics or are curious about politics. And this was just conversations about different issues like we did today. And have a wide range of people. We might not be able to have them in office yet, but we could at least create a forum where people can express their opinions and find out you know, what they can possibly do for their own particular issues that are important to them.
Sure. I think that's a great idea.
Good. I'll start planning it.
I think you should. And I think, really, you're doing so much good right now. People are listening to you, and they're thinking. This isn't some mindless sitcom, you know, come on. This is real stuff, and you're making them think. And that is great. That is the best thing you could do.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. It means a lot that you think so.
Well, listen, I have a busy life, too. Somehow I manage to listen to you every night at 9 o'clock. And when you're on a special time, like at 1 in the afternoon or 7:30 at night, I put it on my bulletin board, and you've seen, there I am listening. So, I mean, you're doing so much good with your podcast. And I'm not flattering you. I mean, people listening right now are thinking, yeah, we should come together. Yeah, it is counterproductive to be so divided, you know? And they wouldn't be thinking that if they weren't listening to your podcast.
So let us do this. We'll take action, and it'll be positive action, and it'll be with the goal of getting people to sit down and talk, you know, rationally. Let's all come together, like you said, and start affecting positive change and letting people know what they can do. I worked in human services for about 4 decades, mostly continuously, but I took a few breaks from it to do other things. And this is before computers. People in the human services had these books that they compiled during their journey through the human services, trying to help people, of different organizations and places that did certain things. And a lot of these places didn't have the budget to exercise. You kind of stumbled across them. But people knew, you know, that if you got enough resources together, you could help anybody with anything. If they needed a computer and they couldn't afford a computer, where can they get a free computer?
I actually have one. I just don't know how to use it.
Oh, okay.
I was paying $100 a month for internet service, which I wasn't using. And I thought, you know, I really can't afford to throw out $100 every month for something I don't even know how to use. So I canceled that. I still have my trusty computer. It's a few years old. It's a Toshiba laptop with a camera and a microphone, because I thought, gee, I can shoot my TV show at home. Well, that didn't happen. So it's not that I don't have a computer. It's that I don't know how to use one. And to be entirely honest, I hate computers. I hate cell phones. I hate this crap. I will not be conscripted into the lemming-like slavery, to mix a metaphor, of everyone everywhere deifying these machines. You walk down the street, and people don't even look. When they're crossing the street, they're looking at their phones. They could be hit by a car. I mean, come on, folks. It's called life. Live it. Don't live on your phone. Don't live on your computer. Young people don't go out anymore. They don't interact. They're home on their computers. My Facebook friend. These are all my friends. You don't know these people. They're not your friends. They're people you'll never meet. They're just people on your computer screen. Get out and meet people. Actual people. Talk to them face to face. You know, I mean, I see that computers have done a wonderful thing for society. You can look up anything at any time, you know, and that's great. And you can connect with almost anyone at any time. But on the other hand, there's something to be said for real human interaction.
Very, very true. So as we plan this thing, we will add human interaction as a part of what it is that we're doing, and get people together physically in a location, maybe a coffee shop, and have meetings in person rather than just on the computer.
That would be great. That would be fabulous.
So that is fantastic. We will make it happen. And we only have 5 minutes or so left, and I'd like people to know how they can contact you if they wish. And also,
how about via you? Since I don't do computers, you know.
That'll be fine. You can definitely contact Diana via me. And how about your television show? You want to tell people how they can watch your show?
Sure. It's called The Diana Montfort Show. It's been on 32 years now. I started it in 1990. We cover a range of topics, mainly LGBTQ topics, political topics. I'm into metaphysics, so we do that. We do UFOs or UAPs, however you want to call them.
Uh-huh.
You know, I know we're supposed to say UAP now, but unidentified aerial phenomena. Well, I like UFO. But anyway, we do a lot of things, you know. basically what interests me, you know.
Okay, we have a lot of overlapping interests. If you would like to be on some of the panels where we discuss these things, you're more than welcome to join them. Nick is on a few.
I would love it.
Okay, great. We have, this month we didn't have it because we had a special, but we have the UFO entity Enigma. That's under the umbrella of Hercules and the Space Gods, which started out
as a joke. I think I heard that one. I think I heard all your shows.
The ones on YouTube also, or?
No, not those, because I don't do computers. But I'm on YouTube. I have a Facebook page, but I don't know how to use it. A friend started it for me, and she died of long COVID. So I have no clue as to how to use any of this stuff, but I have heard all your shows recently, ever since Nick Curto turned me on to your show. I mean, I've been listening relentlessly, as you know.
And I thank you for that. And Nick is a great guy. And today I started something new at the library, Crest Hill Library. It's a meetup for people who are interested in UFOs and paranormal phenomena. So the old timers who were there last time I did this before the pandemic came back, and we're off to a great start. So I am starting to move things back into one-on-one meetings or small groups of people meetings. So our political thing that we do, we'll have that in meetings as well.
Sounds great.
Now, are there any words you'd like to leave people with in terms of the path of public service?
Sure. If you feel a calling to it, investigate, see if it's for you. Join your local political club. I'm not going to recommend a party. You'll know. Try them all and see which one is the best fit. Or rather, try them both and see which one is the better fit. And if you feel moved to involve yourself in politics, do it. You might have to start out stuffing envelopes or giving out brochures in the street, but it's a start, and you'll learn from it, and then you can progress through the ranks and maybe run for office someday.
And that's all within the realm of possibility, and I've seen it happen all around me, and I, too, started getting people to encouraging them to sign up for voting and register.
Oh, yeah, petitioning. It's so important. Yeah, it's so important. Candidates can't run unless they get so many signatures, so petitioning is extremely important.
Well, Diana, thank you so very much. I enjoyed this conversation. Because we dealt with sensitive topics, even though I believe we did them in a very mature and responsible manner, I have to read my disclaimer. An Olympian disclaimer. Aristotle suggested that entertaining new thoughts without feeling obliged to accept them is a wise practice to cultivate. We agree. Our Olympian podcast explores interesting thoughts and viewpoints on a variety of topics, including health, religion, and politics. Our explorations give voice to diverse personal opinions, areas of study, and systems of belief. Discussion in this forum, though sincere and enthusiastic, are not to be construed as Mount Olympus's endorsement of any particular point of view. Well, I enjoyed exploring this topic with you, and
I hope I didn't offend anyone.
No, you said a lot of things that made a lot of sense, and you've given me topics to meditate on for the next week. Thank you very much, Diana.
Thank you, Hercules.
Be well.
You too.
And thanks to everybody who tuned in, whether you clicked on a link and found yourself here, whether you dialed in and you patiently waited in our queue as we spoke, or whether you're going to check us out later on demand. Until next time, this is us wishing you joyous journeys and amazing adventures. Good night, everybody.